lights on for safety, 66 in Kenosha, 65 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. JackAndrea.com.
And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Happy to be sitting opposite from Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, who's made his way across the hallway from his office. And President Albrecht, you almost didn't make it into September. This is cutting it about as close as you can.
Well, I bet you were happier to see me maybe back last May when you knew summer was just on the edge of starting, not on the edge of finishing. But it's always a pleasure to be here. I love the radio programs, and our hosts and our guests are always so engaging. And, you know, on a time like this when we're going through a lot of transition in our community and in our college, it's always important to highlight some of the new things that are taking place.
And some exciting things are going on, and we have a very exciting guest that we will introduce in just a moment. Speaking of excitement, I know you want to say a quick word about the recent visit of Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor to the Kenosha campus of Gateway.
We are always pleased to host guests on campus, but when we have special dignitaries like Lieutenant Governor or the Governor visit, it's important that we highlight and acknowledge the fact that they've taken time out of their busy schedule. They could be anywhere across the state, but they chose Gateway. A few weeks ago, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes was with us and spent some time visiting our Center for Sustainable Living, and we had a chance to show him around a little bit and had an in-depth conversation around the importance of the environment. And he's working on a kind of a statewide tour to help highlight the importance of water quality for the state. The governor had done that about a month ago as he was on campus as well. But we also took a few minutes to show him our Inspire Center, the Center for Human Patient Simulation for Healthcare, because we think the two are connected. Water quality, healthcare are all important, the environmental sciences. So it's just great to have him with us. He's a dynamic person. We're glad that he's helping to lead our state, and really thankful for him taking part here at Gateway.
Very good. I know that you want to say a very big, sincere thank you to SC Johnson, who are such great community citizens in so many different ways, and they have made a gift to Gateway that is going to really make a difference.
We just can't say thank you enough to all of our great industry partners and community-based organizations that support our college. We couldn't do what we do without, of course, the great investment that our taxpayers make, our students, and the concentrated effort they have in order to excel at Gateway. But it does take private sector investment also to make it sustainable. And SC Johnson has been there for the development of our manufacturing programs for many years. In fact, the iMet Center is called the SC Johnson iMet Center because of some major gifts that Fisk Johnson and the Johnson Fund have given to the college. But recently, we received another gift from Fisk to help us advance our integrated manufacturing center around the area of mechatronics. So all new equipment in that lab. We're going to name the lab after SCJ. And just continue to thank you, and continued engagement by companies like SC Johnson help us become better and provide greater opportunities for our students to be successful.
Very good. I know that you wanted to say a word about the Smart Cities series in Racine that has just finished up. What an exciting project this has been.
I do. I get smarter every time I go to these meetings. Well, you know, the Smart City Initiative was really built on the shoulders of the fact that Racine was recognized as one of five smart cities in the U.S. early summer, I guess. And so September was kind of coined as Smart City Month, and events were held throughout the city of Racine. Gateway was really proud and pleased to be a part of it. I had the really unique opportunity to serve on a panel and then moderate another panel. So I continue to learn about the way our communities are changing and how technology has an influence on the change. And just some great announcements of like 5G coming to the city of Racine and how that digital literacy can be shortened and what role Gateway can play in helping educating the populace in order to be able to leverage all of those resources. But just a big shout out to the mayor and the leadership team in Racine for putting all of that together. Hundreds of people came together to talk about the future of the city of Racine based on technology infrastructure.
That folds nicely into our guest, who we'll introduce in just a moment. But first, I think you want to crow for a moment about some awards that were given last night to Gateway's marketing program.
I hope they're listening. I told them to listen this morning because I would give them a shout out. So I was really fortunate last night to be able to attend the Region 3 National Meeting for Marketing Education. And we received two awards, actually. So a great award for our website, another award for one of our marketing brochures that was put together. And just really proud of the entire team. They work really hard to keep our message fresh and to really find ways to encourage folks to learn about Gateway and to enroll in Gateway and to help celebrate all of the successes that we have. So way to go, team.
Yay. Wonderful. Well, without further ado, we need to introduce the very special guest that you have lined up for our program today, namely Celeste Carter, who is with the National Science Foundation. And I understand, Celeste Carter, that you and President Albrecht go back a ways. So we welcome you to the program, and we want to, first of all, learn a little bit about you. And at some point, we hope you'll explain how you and President Albrecht have become so closely acquainted and have become colleagues.
Well, thank you very much, and it's a real pleasure to be on the show. I will say this is the first time I've been on a radio show, so we'll see how I do.
So far, so good.
All right. I am a program officer now at the National Science Foundation, but have been a faculty at a community college in California where I started a biotechnology program and led that program, and that was actually what led me to the National Science Foundation. I was received funding from the program that I now lead, the Advanced Technological Education Program. And part of that program's partnership has been a very, very strong partnership and commitment from the American Association of Community Colleges. And I was thinking back, I think that's probably where I first met President Albrecht, was through the American Association of Community Colleges, but it could have been at another conference. But I do remember him as being a very dynamic speaker, someone who was very passionate about both his institution and his students and student success and learning. So it's just a real pleasure to be with you today.
That's very kind, Celeste. And you're absolutely right. It was through the American Association of Community Colleges. And I always find it intriguing in leadership roles how your past practice has really helped to identify and really create opportunities. And so I think the ATE program, the American Technical Education Program, and Advanced Technical Education initiatives around NSF leading toward the advancement of community colleges, I think is really fundamental in the way that we've shifted some of the work we're doing here at Gateway, and I'm sure other colleges around the country.
So that's very good to hear.
So, Celeste Carter, let's hear a little bit about the National Science Foundation, which certainly is a prestigious organization in many different respects. Would be great if you would sketch for us some of its history and also tell us a little bit about what your specific responsibilities are with the NSF.
Certainly. So NSF is an independent federal agency that was created by Congress in 1950, so it's been around for a while. Mm. Currently, the annual budget is around $8 billion. Of course, we're all sort of waiting for final appropriations. That won't happen this year anytime soon. We will be on a continuing resolution. But I think one of the important things to remember about the National Science Foundation is that almost one quarter of all federally supported basic research in science, technology, engineering, and math is supported by NSF and conducted by the United States colleges and universities. So that's one extremely important and very large role for the agency. But in addition to basic research, there's also a special call out to education, educating the next generation of the science, technology, and engineering, math, or STEM workforce, as well as educating a STEM literate public. And I've really been privileged to work in the Education and Human Resources Directorate in the Division of Undergraduate Education, so around that role of educating the STEM workforce. So we have several programs here that support excellent STEM learning for all undergraduate students, and I happen to currently be the lead program director for the Advanced Technological Education, or ATE, program. And that's been around for quite a while as well. It was created by NSF in response to the Scientific and Advanced Technology Act of 1992. I just wanted to give a special call out to Senator Barbara Mikulski and Congressman David Price. Senator Mikulski is retired, but Congressman Price still takes an active interest in this program, and as well as the role that the American Association of Community Colleges played in working on the original SATA Act, and then making sure that it had the people supporting it and actually getting it initially signed into law. So this is a program then that educates what's now being called the skilled technical workforce that keeps the United States globally competitive, the industries in the United States. So that's, I guess, a little bit more than just about NSF, but it's a real privilege being part of this effort.
Yes, Celeste, I appreciate that. It really helps to identify sort of the background of how we got to where we are today. And I'm always intrigued because when I first started teaching, I taught technology education, which had a focus on engineering. And you may remember Dr. Salinger, who was really leading the effort around helping the ITEA, the International Technology Education Association, become more engaged in NSF funding through the engineering sector. I would just be curious, over these last few decades, how have things changed at NSF and the types of conversation and projects you're seeing being developed by colleges or organizations? Because STEM is, while it's fairly well known in the education circles, it's still fairly new outside of education.
It is, although I think we would both agree that it's become, the actual acronym STEM is out there now sort of everywhere, which I think is great. One of the things that I like to talk about there is that initially the acronym was SMET, and it was at the Advanced Technological Education Principal Investigators Conference several years ago now that our then Assistant Director for the Education and Human Resources Directorate was giving the welcome to this very large ATE community. And she started off and she said, SMET. I don't really like that acronym very much. I think it isn't really a very good acronym. She said, I think we ought to change it to STEM. So one of the things I like about the fact that it is now STEM and recognized much more broadly is that that actually came about mainly because of someone coming to the ATEPI conference. So STEM is out there. This program has been around now, the ATE program, for 26 years. There is much more knowledge about and realization that having these kinds of competencies and skills and understanding of these different areas of science, technology, engineering, math is really critical to a person's real career pathway. But this 26 years of funding, you know, things have changed. I think initially a lot of the projects that came in tended to be a little more tentative. The program requires that any project has the backing and support, more than just support, a commitment from industry to work with faculty and institutions. And as things change in industry, the program has changed. So initially some of it was, well, what about these, and we still talk about this, basic math skills? What about someone understanding technology areas? And as things have become more sophisticated, we see things like increasing numbers of institutions thinking about things like, which was already brought up on the program this morning, water, the importance of water and wastewater, how we need an educated workforce for that industry. We have renewable energy coming in, wind and solar, and probably one of the newer areas, most new area, I don't know if that's a proper use of English there, are on autonomous technologies. So we all are hearing about autonomous cars, and certainly people are talking about drones. So this is an area that is now coming into the program. Many, many institutions are starting programs around autonomous technologies, and one of the new centers that was just funded this past year is a National Center on Autonomous Technologies. So I love this program because industry and education together form the important structure for it and really move it forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing it here firsthand at Gateway. We continue to evolve our programs, and you know, industry has a major influence on the types of skills that we teach here. And I just have to say, I did not know the history of the word STEM, so that's really intriguing.
Yeah. Fascinating.
I'm going to do a little bit more work on that.
Yeah, I'm glad somebody spoke up, because that makes all the difference. For those of you just joining us, our guest today on the morning show, along with President Brian Albrecht, president of Gateway Technical College, is Celeste Carter, who is with the National Science Foundation. And we're getting kind of the historical perspective on the National Science Foundation, which has been around since 1950. But, of course, the nature of what they have done and the challenges they've had in staying, in a sense, ahead of the curve have only become more complex as time has gone on. You've already touched upon the advanced technical education matter, a special sort of wing of funding within the National Science Foundation. Is there anything you want to add about this particular facet of the NSF and your involvement with it?
Well, I think I would like people to know this truly is a program that focuses on the two-year community and technical colleges across the United States. And that's something very new. You know, a lot of people think of NSF and they think of basic research and research-intensive universities. But when this SETA Act was signed into law and Congress mandated the National Science Foundation to begin this program, it was primarily focused on two-year institutions, and it still is. And the idea was that to keep the United States globally competitive, you needed a skilled technical workforce. And that, even 26 years ago, the realization was there that that was going to be more than a high school degree, but in many cases less than a four-year degree, which is why it placed it squarely under the purview of two-year institutions. So I think this is a very unique program for the National Science Foundation, and I just like people to really recognize that.
And I would guess at this time in our history of our country, it could never be more important. I mean, we continue to talk about the skilled worker shortage and what is it going to take to not only transition people that are coming into the profession with new skills, but the incumbent workers, so all Americans can be affected by the types of research that's being done in partnership with the technical and community colleges.
So last month on this program, on President Albrecht's visit to the morning show, we interviewed Anne Claire Anderson from the Future of Work Project, which is funded by the National Science Foundation. And this at a glance would seem to maybe be a little bit different from some of the other things that the NSF has funded or is funding. How would you fold this into kind of the overall work and outreach of the NSF? Is this actually a fairly typical sort of project, or is this something that, in a sense, is new and different and distinct?
Well, it's a little bit of both. So one of the things that that is a common conversational topic around the foundation is what are new emerging areas that NSF needs to stay abreast of, knowledgeable about, and also work as a catalyst with the community, be it research and also in the case of ATE workforce development, to think about what's happening, what are the changes that are going on. And so NSF a few years back published 10 big ideas. And one of those 10 big ideas was the future of work at the human technology frontier. And when those were published, the project personnel from the future of work and technician education contacted me, and they said, well, you know, a lot of this is around basic research, but we think we need to start thinking now about how changing the future of work as it changes will change the skills and competencies that the entry-level technical workforce will need to have. And so in a sense, this is a very special project, but it's also in line with keeping our whole community and the National Science Foundation on sort of on the cutting edge of what's happening. You know, some of the things that come up with that are automation, which obviously there's a lot of discussion about that. People worry that robots will take away jobs. I think one of the findings we're seeing is that they just develop different kinds of jobs. And I know one of the plenary speakers at one of the conferences this past summer, the High Impact Technology Conference, said that one of the things we need to be thinking about with our students is growing or infusing their thought processes with neuroplasticity. And that's one I'm still trying to grapple with. I'm trying to think about, you know, how we do that effectively.
Well, Celeste, what I think is so intriguing about this particular project, The Future of Work, is that it models kind of the examples of how new programs are developed at the two-year college level, industry advisory oversight, a committee that provides feedback and engagement, and then a dialogue around how do we now begin to deliver and teach the types of skills that we're hearing from our employers. So it's really a remarkable project because it collects all of the different work that's happening in many different industry sectors and tries to, I guess, essentially boil them down to what are the top employment type skills that are necessary for the next economy, the digital economy.
Right, and it is an exciting project.
Mm-hmm. So, Celeste Carter, tell us about the connection that the NSF and specifically Advanced Technical Education has with a place like Gateway, and why you think this connection is so very important, and what comes out of it.
Well, I think any time we can form a partnership, and I look at funding an award to any institution really as forming a partnership. I think it has impacts nationally, but also very, very important for the institution. It has impact on the students that are there. It has impact on the faculty that participate on the project itself, that are the lead project personnel, and it also, I think, changes the institution. It's very different. It's wonderful to have different foundations, nonprofit organizations involved with your institution. But one of the things we found over the years is that partnering with the federal government is a different level of commitment for an institution. And so I think that's very important. I think that's one of the things that President Albrecht really recognizes and reaches out and embraces, and which is wonderful, because it's a critical part of the partnership. I think you need the focus from the faculty looking up, saying we need to do these things for our students, and you need an administrator like President Albrecht who says, yes, we do, and I will support you in whatever way it takes. And then the National Science Foundation can step in and say, well, you know, as a catalyst to get all of this going, we can provide funding for you. So it forms, I think, a great relationship, and one I'd love to see have formed with every community and technical college in the United States.
Yeah, I think you summarized it correctly. It's so much more than a grant, and I look at it like this. I remember my time back in Madison when I was fortunate to work for the Department of Public Instruction. Madison Area Technical College, now called Madison College, received an NSF grant to help form a national center around the biotechnology industry. So I was able to learn and gain a lot of information that I would not have had access to had not they created that infrastructure around around biotechnology, which led to some great partnerships with local industries and a partnership here with a company called Promega. So Gateway has a connection back to that work many, many years ago. And I look at how this has been able to help elevate our faculty engagement, not only on campus working with industry, but outside of campus working with these centers around the country and gaining some of the really the world's best practices in new and emerging industry occupations like nanotechnology, biotechnology, now you're saying autonomous vehicle technology, and all of those areas of which we know are important, but we don't necessarily have all the capacity on any one college to make that happen. So the NSF and bringing the ATE partners together really helps to give us an advantage in getting that type of technology and information to our faculty at a much earlier stage.
Celeste Carter, let's circle back to the Future of Work project, which we touched on a little bit earlier. I wonder if you could maybe speak to some of the specific objectives that might be wrapped up in that particular project and what kind of difference you think it might ultimately make.
Well, part of it is the title speaks for itself, The Future of Work. How will work change? I mean, when you started the program with President Albrecht, he was talking about the mechatronics program. I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, people didn't refer to mechatronics, even though it's now a common term and program that has been implemented sort of across the United States in many institutions, including four-year institutions with four-year engineering programs. So the future of work is something that the objective was is looking at it now and speaking with industry. Where do they see their industry area going in the next 5 to 10 years, and how then do we as educators, and for me, from my standpoint in the federal government, respond to those kinds of needs? So, you know, from my standpoint, it could be that in a call for proposals, there's a special call out saying, well, within nanotechnology, the industry sees that they are going to need X, or maybe even in terms of employability skills, asking people to think about how will you educate students to work both with robots and even cobots.
So this is interesting.
Those are the kinds of things I would like to see come out of it.
Yeah, Celeste. So Celeste is joining us from Washington, but I'm sitting across the desk here from Greg Berg, who is facilitating and hosting today's program. And I'm thinking about the future of work because in many cases, we define work as a job and now as a pathway career. So we try to help people understand that, you know, a job can lead to another job, a second job, a third job, and then pretty soon you build a pathway of opportunity and career. But what we're talking about here is the entire nature of work itself. So Greg's across from me running a digital radio show on his laptop, on his cell phone. Everything is very mobile. Everything is sort of just-in-time digital learning. And that environment of work is what essentially is really driving this dialogue. How do we prepare people for all of those different aspects of how work is delivered today? It's not specific to one particular skill set. They're all integrated. And it's fascinating.
And also a little, and it's also in a sense a little scary.
It could be,
I mean, for somebody who's already in the workplace and kind of knew the work world in one way, the whole landscape, the whole nature of work in so many sectors is changing dramatically, and that's sometimes a little mix of exciting and scary to be part of it and trying to figure out how do you fit into that and into that future.
It is, and that's also one of the things I think is important about this program is that in addition to supporting students who have just walked onto the campus that say, hey, I think I have an interest in some specific disciplinary area, we need to be thinking about incumbent workers as well that either need upskilling or reskilling. I think one of the terms I would say is, which has been around for a long time, we all need to be lifelong learners. Well, so how do you keep people engaged and say this is a part of advancing your own career pathway, is being up to date, staying active, staying curious. You know, I guess that's one of the things I love about the whole STEM area, is that it engages people and keeps you thinking about the next question, because there's always a next question. You know, it could be, how is my job going to change? What do you mean they're telling me I'm going to have to do whatever? How am I going to do that? To, I've always been interested in automation, and wow, things have really changed, and I want to learn about it. So there's that kind of perspective as well. So I think that's important to get across to students as well, wherever they are.
Sure, and highlights the important role that Gateway can play in our community and colleges across America can play, because that's where people would go to refine those skills or to upgrade those skills. And, you know, you take a look at all the different populations that are served in higher education. I think the most diverse is our two-year community college population base. And so whether it's new skills coming in or incumbent workers being reskilled, all of those play an important role on helping our economies be able to survive and sustain. Now, just for our listening audience, I do want to paint the rest of the picture. Greg does have a landline on his desk as well yet, so he's still, anchored in one way.
Yeah. There's a rather old-fashioned phone right here, although it doesn't have a dial. At least it has touchtone.
Right.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Celeste Carter, who is with the National Science Foundation and a longtime friend and colleague of my other guest on the morning show today, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. Celeste Carter, let's circle back to the matter of STEM education. And since you have been in this field for a while, you probably have a sense of how this notion, this concept of STEM has maybe changed the way schools approach the whole matter of mathematics and science programming and how they deliver that to their students. How has the concept of STEM changed this?
Wow, I think it's not only changed the classroom, it's also changed things out of the classroom these days. You know, one of the things you hear more about are STEM camps, or even girls coding camps. But within the classroom, what I'd love to see is, we really have a large population of people in the United States that, if you really sit down and ask them, and I don't care whether it's students or parents, they would probably admit that math really was a tough one for them, and maybe they're a little bit math phobic. And similar to science, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, math and science are really hard. They're difficult subjects. So, wow, as soon as I could get rid of my general ed requirement there, I never went back. Yet all of us are impacted by science and math every day. So I think one of the important things in what we've been able to do, especially within the ATE program, is to support faculty who really think outside the box regarding how you get the concepts of science and math across to students in a way that is easy for them to understand and grasp. And one of the things that's come out of that is using just-in-time strategies. Don't try and put something into someone's head where they aren't going to use it for another 8 or 9 months. You wait until they need a certain concept or skill, and that's when it's introduced. And the other thing I think faculty have done really a brilliant job with is taking especially math and contextualizing it to a specific area. So for me, I had a biotechnology program in California, and things like concentration and dilution and solutions were always something that students had a problem with. But I found that when it came time to make a solution, you worked with them on the math, generally the light bulb would go on. So it's not only just in time, it's also contextualizing it to what you need. And I think those are some of the things that are changing across our educational institutions to really make all of the STEM disciplines more accessible to students and more fun, because they should be fun.
Yeah, I think you've really highlighted it. That's what I try to remind people. STEM makes math and science fun, because it's through an applied or engineering process, a design process. And I go to our fab lab quite often, and I see the excitement of especially young children when they're taking a look at how they can manipulate software to create a project, to 3D print something. And whether it's a fab lab, makerspace, an integrated learning environment, collaborative teaching that's going on to help identify how these skills can be used. And I just really think that through NSF and the leadership that you've provided and is creating this identity for advanced math and science and principles through STEM is really making a big difference in our schools.
By the way, I have to take just a second. Whenever I talk to any expert about STEM, I have to ask if you are open to the idea of STEAM rather than STEM, since I'm kind of a music person on the side. And of course,
absolutely.
The idea that
you'll have to look up this when we finish with this interview. Please go on Google and look up the STEM Guitar Project. An ATE project that's been funded for over 10 years now. It is international. It is faculty that the students actually learn all of the math necessary to make their own electronic guitar, and they're now branching into acoustic guitars. And it combines material science, math, engineering, art. That's just one project, but that's one I think has a lot of material available on the web that you could look at.
This could be Greg's greatest interview, smiling from ear to ear.
That does make me happy. Well, in part, I mean, it's not just that so much of my life is rooted in the arts, but just the idea as well that if we are living in an ever-changing world, and even if someone wants to pretty much stay in the track of science or mathematics or engineering or whatever it might be, it's never been more important to be creative and open in sort of meeting these ever-evolving challenges that are out there in this ever-changing world. And it just seems to me that having at least some experience within the arts can foster that sense of creativity that it seems to me is really essential in all of this.
I definitely agree.
Tell us a little bit about the connection that the National Science Foundation has with any other agencies that are involved in some probably similar projects. For instance, the Department of Education, the American Association of Community Colleges, and other such agencies. What kind of connection and sense of collaboration is there between these various organizations?
Well, the easiest one to speak to is the American Association of Community Colleges, because they've actually been involved from the very, very beginning of even thinking about an idea of a program like the ATE program being developed. We work with the AACC, the American Association of Community Colleges, on a daily basis. They actually have intellectual input into the program. They support the Principal Investigators Conference every year. We're working on a new conference that will be coming up, in November, mid-November, on looking at programs that stimulate undergraduate research experiences at community and technical colleges, and that's writ large. That's more than just a traditional summer experience for a student. It could be course-based. It could be an internship with industry. It could be a competition. So we're bringing together people, and that's all being developed and supported by the American Association for Community Colleges. So we do a lot with them. Other federal agencies, it really depends on what's going on across D.C. I've worked on the federal STEM strategic plan for education for the past few years, and that's involved 13 different agencies meeting on a regular basis to talk about STEM education, the programs that we all have that we support, talking about whether or not they were duplicative. We worked on various projects over that time period. Currently working with the Department of Education on providing technical assistance to the Manufacturing USA Institutes, which are large institutes funded mainly out of the Departments of Energy, Commerce, and Defense. So I'd say we do pretty well with working across agencies. And then, of course, the Department of Labor is also very has similar role in educating the workforce. So we work with the Department of Labor as well.
I think that's extremely important because at the college level, so we certainly want to apply for a Department of Labor grant or a Department of Education grant, a Carl Perkins grant, and if we have access to information that's being developed through the National Science Foundation on these cutting-edge initiatives and technologies, it just makes it more relevant when we apply for other outside federal funding. So the two work hand in glove, and I think for colleges, it's really about leveraging the technical expertise of each of those organizations.
So yes, and I think you can leverage them, yeah, which is a great, that's a great point.
Celeste Carter, as you look back on your work at the NSF, the National Science Foundation, what would be maybe one or two of the most memorable programs or events that you have had some part in that you really believe have powerfully impacted either the education or workforce community?
Well, and I'm prejudiced, right, because I lead this program, but I truly think the ATE program has had an enormous impact on the two-year community and technical colleges across the United States around workforce development, and I think that's one I would call out. The other one is really one that I've been working on now for the past couple of years. The National Science Foundation is governed by the National Science Board. And our director sits on that board, as well as many other esteemed colleagues from many of the research universities across the United States. And a recent new member to the board, well, actually a couple of years ago now, Dr. Victor McCrary came on the board, and he said to the board, he said, well, what does everybody know and what do you think is important about the sector of the workforce that we don't talk about very much, the skilled technical workforce. And the board pretty much was not very well equipped to discuss it. And what came out of that, Dr. McCrary's initial conversation with them was the establishment of a special task force around the skilled technical workforce. And I've been very privileged for the last couple of years to work with them. They have visited community college campuses. They have interviewed industry, faculty, and students. And they just recently published a report that you can get on the National Science Foundation website that is titled, at the top it says National Science Board, and the title is The Skilled Technical Workforce, Crafting America's Science and Engineering Enterprise. And I think that that's been an incredibly important thing, mainly because one of the first things they discovered is that although almost 50% of our undergraduate students are on two-year campuses across the United States, the National Center for Science and Engineering Statistics had never gathered data on them. So we have this indicators report that's published every 2 years that talks about the STEM workforce and what's happening in it and students and where they're going. And yet they'd never collected any data on a two-year student. So one of the recommendations that's actually already being carried out from this report is that the center is now collecting data on two-year students. So I think that if I were going to come up with two sort of really big high-level things, one would be ATE and two would be the fact that the National Science Board has looked at and is looking at this sector of the workforce and is changing the way we collect data around it.
By the way, how do projects get selected for funding? We don't have a lot of time, so we can't hear every last detail about the process, but what can you tell us that might be interesting for the typical listener to know about what this project, about how projects get selected for funding? And what advice would you have for somebody who wants to be successful in that application process?
So there are two things I always ask people to read carefully. One is either you could call it a call for proposals or a solicitation for a program. There's a lot of information there. And then there's another document on the NSF site that talks about preparing a proposal to submit, and then even award administration. And the acronym for that is, because it's easier to put that into the search box, is PAPPG. So if people read those two things, the first thing you're going to see is that there are two merit review criteria that the National Science Foundation uses when people are reading and reviewing proposals. One is the intellectual merit, and the other are broader impacts. And as we don't have much time, I won't go into a lot on that. But I often tell people, I say, think about the fact that it's a panel of your peers will be reading your proposal. They don't know you. They'd better not know you. They have to declare a conflict of interest if they do. They don't know your institution, and they don't know why you are proposing what you're proposing. So think about crafting something that a general person who has not been involved with you is going to understand. And that's sort of the really important thing. President Albrecht mentioned Dr. Gerhard Salinger earlier, and I use a slide that Dr. Salinger prepared a long time ago. 5 points to make a competitive proposal. One is describe the need. Two is describe specific goals and activities that will meet that need. Three, have a project team that actually has the expertise to carry out your activities. Figure out how you're going to assess whether or not you're actually being successful or not, so that you could change strategies if you needed to. And then a plan, since if you're going to come into the federal government, one of the things you want to do is tell other people about it. How are you going to tell other people about what you've done? Because these are federal dollars. They are our taxpayer dollars that are supporting all of these projects. So those are kind of, in a quick nutshell, some of the things that I think are very important. For people that are interested in maybe crafting a proposal, maybe thinking about it, you know, reading those first two documents, the solicitation and then the PAPPG, is important. ATE does support a couple of other special projects that will actually provide one-on-one mentoring for new people that are thinking of writing a proposal. And one is called Mentor Connect, and the other one is Mentor Links. And both of those literally will provide 9 months and a mentor that will work with a team of people at an institution to craft a proposal. So I think those are very important things to remember and look up.
Those are excellent resource examples, and I think can really help benefit anyone interested in looking at how NSF funds their projects. And I know, serving as a PI on a project and also serving as a reviewer for other projects, I remember Dr. Salinger telling me there are no bad ideas on this, right, Brian? But what will happen is that you will get feedback from peers, and they will help you to refine your thoughts and ideas. So it's not a one and done. You don't just write an application and, oh, I got funded, or, oh, I didn't get funded. It's an ongoing dialogue around how we can help shape those ideas into something that's going to be extremely meaningful, that will foster investment by the National Science Foundation. So just really thankful for you and your team and all the work they do to help prepare colleges and teams in order to put those ideas together.
So, Les Scudder, how do listeners learn more about the National Science Foundation and all the good work that you are doing?
We do have a website. It is nsf.gov. And if they're interested specifically in the programs that in the Division of Undergraduate Education, they look under research areas and look at the Education and Human Resources Directorate, and then they can find all of the programs that are within that directorate, including those within Division of Undergraduate Education. I know on our page, on the Division of Undergraduate Education page, there's a little icon that says, "Do you want to get news updates by email?" And you can click on that, enter your email address and any search terms that you would be interested in. And anytime anything is published by NSF around those search terms, you'll get a notice in your email box, in your inbox. So I think that's one of the ways. We have our own digital portal and library. That's atecentral.net. The Mentor Connect project is mentor-connect.org. I know I'm tossing out a lot of things. And one thing that's coming up that has been sort of on hiatus for a year is the Community College Innovation Challenge, and I'd love it if people would go to the NSF site, find out about the challenge. We're hoping to get it restarted this coming year and in this next fiscal year in 2020, and I'd love to have teams from across the United States thinking about the problems posed and coming up with ideas and coming to submit for the competition.
Fantastic. Celeste Carter is with the National Science Foundation. We so appreciate you making time in your busy schedule to be part of the morning show today. This was really fun. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much.
And, of course, President Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. Great to have you here as well.
Thank you, Greg.
I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on the morning show, I look forward to a visit with Dr. Pavel Usinov, who is a Russian economist on the faculty of the Russian Academy of National Economy in St. Petersburg, a visitor to the campus of Carthage College, speaking on campus later today, and joining us tomorrow on the morning show, along with Dr. Yuri Maltsev. On Wednesday, Herschel Kruger joins us from the Carthage Theater Department to talk about a special presentation of A Doll's House, and we hope to preview for you an upcoming performance later this week by the group Women of the World. We'll talk about mental illness